Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. So normally, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us on Tuesdays at noon. He will join us later on this week. Important guy, important week at the Super Bowl. So we'll catch up with Tim Hasselbeck on Thursday at noon. But we... all of us listened this morning to Chad Brinker's sit down with the official Titans podcast. It's Mike Keith and Coach Mac kind of chatting with Chad Brinker about what his role is, because I think that we all are guilty of, myself included, focusing in on the relationship between Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan, which of course makes sense because that's the traditional relationship in the NFL, is head coach and general manager. But whenever Brian Callahan was formally introduced by the Titans as the next head coach, we got some clarity as to, okay, Rand has final say, this is Rand's job, but also Chad Brinker kind of sounded like, on paper, got a bit of a promotion as well. So I was curious, how does Chad Brinker's job and duties and role play into this trio, or even, you know, the four people of Amy and Brian Callahan and Rand Carthon? What is his role? What is his job description? So before we get into one thing that kind of stuck out to me that maybe clarified one question that I did have, just some of your initial thoughts and takeaways from Chad Brinker's sit down with the official Titans podcast.
I think they're going to be, they're going to try to marry this old school with new school analytics. I think that's going to be their mission. There's a point in the interview when Brinker brings up, you know, silos and barriers. He wants this thing to be as transparent as possible. He wants there to be a clear line of communication with everyone from the top on down. No silos, no barriers that we got to cross or whatnot. We got to feel that if we're going to do this together, everybody has to be on the same page and everybody has to understand truly what's going on. The coach is going to coach. The GM is going to do his GM duties, and then Brinkert is going to do what he does. I always said that, and I think the interview sort of reiterated what I was thinking, that Amy wanted her organization back. She wanted a structure back that she did not have. She wanted for there to be defined roles, but in those defined roles, there was transparency and there was a way to get to everybody. Like, everybody can talk to one another, even though we all have a defined role. It's not, I got a defined role, I can't talk to you because I'm doing what I need to do and you just do what you need to do. No. We all have a role here, but we're all going to communicate in this role. That's what I sort of kind of got out of it. And then the analytics thing, I mean, how much are they going to use of it? That's what I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah. That and how they'll implement it.
Yeah.
For example, Chad Brinker says in there, when I got here, he said there was very little in place when it came to analytics. Now, as we've talked about, analytics means a lot of different things, right? It's a very deep thing. It doesn't just mean, do you go for it on fourth down?
Yeah.
Which is what I think some people think analytics is, or if they've seen or read the book or seen the movie Moneyball, they're like, oh, you just look at on-base percentage, you know, or something like that. It's very complex. And he said what it means to me is, how do you find the inefficiencies in the market where you can exploit, you can gain an advantage by understanding where the market is looking the other way or missing out on? Like, what's that next advantage you can gain?
Yeah.
And like, how do you use your finances accordingly, your resources? And Brinker's got a really interesting skill set. He said, look, we had no analytics department. He said it's going to take 3 years to put it all together the way he wants to do it. My eyes opened wide when I heard that, because I knew that they weren't doing much analytics. I didn't realize how much more he felt Brinker could, how much more Brinker feels they can do. He's mentioned a woman that he's got along side that does a lot of the math.
From the Rams, yeah.
From the Rams. And he said there's going to be more people. There's the sports science part of it. There's how the trainers work with the coach. He went to this very complex place. But what I'm confident in hearing this, because I had never really heard Brinker talk. I've heard about Brinker. I've heard Rand talk about Brinker. I've heard Vrabel reference Chad a few times, but you didn't know what he was doing back there. But Brinker has a unique skill set in that he is a football player. He was a great high school football player. He was a great college football player at Ohio. He was a fringe NFL player that never really made it. He was NFL Europe. He got injured. He was on practice squads. But he played a high enough level of football. He understands football and what it's like to be a player. But he's also got this graduate degree where he studied the math and the analytics and the business part of it and how the two work together. There's very few people, I think, that can blend those two, which I think will help him implement this vision he has of how do all the people that are doing all this analysis on how you win football games away from the field, how do you marry that with the people that are in the trenches and are just football guys, right? And that's how every sport has had to do this. But you got to have the right person who can speak both languages. I think he's got that unique skill set.
I think it's important to not just have, like some nerd walk into the building.
Because the football coach isn't going to listen to that guy.
But I do wonder, because you bring up how he said it was going to take 3 years. Why? Like, when you say it's going to take us 3 years to build a championship football team, well, you're working with a certain number of amount of cash available, certain number of picks. There's only so many free agents out there. Like, I understand that from the actual football team building side of things. But what's going to take 3 years about building an analytics department? Is there a certain data that you need to collect over time? That's what I wondered. Like, well, is it going to take you 3 years to find people that you feel like are qualified enough to serve in this role? That's what I didn't know. Why 3 years?
I think he mentioned some software. Look, I'm not an expert in this field at all. I was just listening to what he said. But he said, they need to hire more people, I think he said. He said there's software, there's data that they need to run through. He explains it in the podcast. I thought it was just a really good in-depth character study of what he's trying to do and laying out his vision. And also, it's pretty clear that he's been giving a lot more responsibilities than I realized. I thought he was just basically one of the people under Rand Carthon, but basically he's alongside Rand Carthon. He mentions as a big theme that we're going to put people into their roles where they flourish. And so he basically was saying, he clearly has a ton of respect for Rand Carthon. Rand Carthon is the guy that brought him on board here, so it's not like he's forgotten that. But I think Rand Carthon is also smart enough to delegate and say, along with Amy Adams Strunk, all right, Chad, I want you to build the modern football program here. Take what you learned in Green Bay. Take what you've learned other places, and let's catch up with everything. And in return, I'm just going to do what I do best, and that's get in there, build relationships with the players, relationships with our coaching staff, talent evaluation. And so I think they've tried to streamline Rand's strengths and what he does best. And Chad is taking care of the big picture stuff. Well, that's how I understood it.
I mean, okay, let's just go to the 3 year thing. And this has been sort of the theme, because we look across the street and we see, Barry said he can say we are in rebuild phase, sort of. Be patient with this. It's going to take us some years. We got some young guys that are in Milwaukee that are promising, but they're not ready yet. We got some older guys on our team that eventually they're going to be aging out a little bit. So when those young guys start to really grow, this when this team's really going to kick it in. It's going to free agency, all this other stuff. So it's going to take us a minute to build the team the way that we want it. So you can see the consistency on the ice.
And when building a team, I totally get that.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Football, you can't say that. You can't come out and say we are in rebuild mode. Why? Because ain't nobody going to show up at the stadium. Nobody.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard. You can't say it. So what Brinker says is it's going to take at least 3 years. Well, what's going to take 3 years? To get all this analytic stuff and everything else that's going to help this team be the best championship team it can possibly be. It's going to take some years. What he's basically saying is it's going to take some years for this team to get to a point where we're winning on a consistent basis and we're competing for championships. He can't come out and say we are in rebuild mode. He can say it's going to take 3 years to build up this model, because this analytical model is helping us on the field, whether it be with injuries, scouting players, this and that. That gives, if you're listening to it, it says, okay, is this thing going to take three? Is that what he's saying? It's going to take 3 years to really get this team where it's consistently winning on the field? Because remember, it took John and Mike about 3 years to build that team that was in the AFC championship. Well, that was the number one seed. They lucked up into the AFC championship that year. I'm not going to say they lucked up into it. I think everything bounced their way. That 1 year they went to the AFC championship.
I do think there's a whole lot of luck involved.
Yeah, but essentially it was like 3 years for them to get to that point. They never said anything about a rebuild.
And he didn't say it's going to take us 3 years to win. He was talking specifically about
the
what he wants to implement.
But I think that helps them on the field.
True.
That will help them on the field.
Another thing he said that caught my attention along those lines was he said, eventually we don't want to be in the business of going for the big dollar first wave free agents. Mm-hmm. You don't want to rely on those guys. But I think he was also kind of saying, right now, they kind of need to patch some holes. They might have to do that. But he was saying you want to get to a point where you are dominating the draft. You're dominating those guys who fall through the cracks, who build, you know, get you that depth to where you're not sitting there having to overpay.
But what teams did he mention? What teams did he mention?
He mentioned the Packers. He mentioned the Ravens. He mentioned
Steelers.
The
49ers. The teams that have been really good at that stuff.
Like consistently good for you. They may have a down year here and there, but consistently they are the model franchise around the NFL.
I think, to your thought, D-Mace, I really hope that's not what he means, to have patience with us on the field as you also have patience with us building up analytics. Because if this team is only as good as its analytics department, I don't think you're going to win very much.
Well, it was not the stress.
I was just referencing D-Mace's
because it seems like they want to have both. They want to have the analytics and they want to have the scouting, because scouting is important.
And that's where Anthony Robinson is sort of the head of that.
Because he even said, like, listen, those regional scouts are GMs for us. They are looking at players that we may not have time to look at. So they are essentially GMs. They scout these players, they give a grade, they bring them back to us, and then we together sort of go through names and where we're going to pick, and does this player fit for our team? So with that, that's a part of, okay, the old school scouting. But then you have the new school sort of analytics. That helps the team. How it helps them, only they know. And other teams, it may have helped San Francisco. It may have helped. It's helped Green Bay. It's helped Baltimore. It's helped Pittsburgh. It's going to take time to build that analytics the way they want it. I think in the process, it may take them time, because this team has a lot of holes to fill. They have a lot. Now, they can, you know, even Houston. Even though we look at this season and say, man, they got a new coach, new this, new that, and look at what they were able to do. But no, they were in purgatory. They were in the dumps for, what, 3 or 4 years until they finally got that coach and that offensive coordinator and that quarterback that helped them build that team back up. Now, they're still in building phase, meaning Houston. They haven't reached the point that they want to get, because it was evident that when they faced Baltimore, that Houston team really wasn't on the same playing as Baltimore. They really wasn't. It's going to take them another year to sort of build it up even more, to ultimately they get to where they're competing. You look at Kansas City, you look at San Francisco. It took San Francisco, about three years to build that thing up. And now what are they doing? They're competing every year. I look at the Tennessee Titans the same way. Once they build up this analytics program, or whatever they want to call it, and mirror it with the scouting, it may take a couple of years for all of that to come together. So now it's running like a well-oiled machine. Now everybody knows what it's doing, and everybody can piggyback off of it. And everybody knows that, okay, this is why, you know, this analytics says this about that person, and it rings true about that person, or is damn near close to it. That's going to take a minute. Not to say that the Titans can't see instant progress on the field, but I think when you're trying to marry the analytics with the scouting and the players that you put on the field, it may take 2 to 3 years for all that to happen.
He says a number of times, the people make the decisions. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to get the right information in the right language, in clear language, mm-hmm. right? He says deep thinking, but clear language is something he's, to that effect that he's saying. So that's a culture they're trying to build. And what was also evident to me, and this wasn't discussed because this is not a podcast where you get into like hard-hitting questions, right? This is very informative, though, is it's sort of implied. He used the word silos. That was the number one thing that D-Mace picked up this morning when we were all kind of kicking around our ideas on this.
What are silos? I mean,
he said they weren't – I don't think the Vrabel group that they walked into was on board with this bigger, more modern – system for whatever reason.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Amy ultimately decided to move on from Mike. She said, I want to be a more forward-thinking football team where, you know, the Patriot way that this team was maybe operating under could be an antiquated approach to scouting and to coaching and developing players. But what I want to get into coming up next, one of my biggest questions was, all right, okay, so you're going to marry scouting and analytics. But there is going to come a day, a time, an instance, whether it's free agency or the draft, where scouts say one thing and analytics might say something else. So what do you defer to? Does the analytics have quote-unquote final say? Do you defer to what your scouts say over what the analytics say? And that's what I want to get into coming up next. What Chad Brinker had to say about that. And we'll get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, stay tuned into the Chase and Big Joe show tomorrow morning between 9 and 11 a.m. for details on how you could win a pair of tickets to see Def Leppard and Journey with Steve Miller Band at Nissan Stadium. So we're breaking down Chad Brinker's appearance on the official Titans podcast. And one thing that I feel very certain of after listening to that podcast is Chad Brinker has a whole heck of a lot of skins on the wall. That Chad Brinker is an incredibly important person within that building. And of course, you know, when the Titans initially announced the new roles, Brian Callahan, the head coach, Rand Carthon with final say, we also heard that Chad Brinker is reporting directly to Amy Adams-Drunk. You do not report directly to the owner of the team unless you are an incredibly important person. But one question that I had going into the podcast was analytics obviously are going to be a much higher priority for the Titans. They want to integrate more analytics into scouting, into game time decisions, in-game decisions. But I think that there's probably going to come a time, more often maybe than not, where analytics tell you one thing and your scouts tell you something else. So what do you defer to? Who do you trust? And I don't think that there is a blanket statement that we're always going to defer to analytics or we're always going to defer to the scouts. But with Chad Brinker being such an analytically driven and very important person within this organization, maybe how does he view it? What do you prioritize? Scouts' opinions or what the numbers and analytics tell you? And Chad Brinker at least shined a little bit of light, in my opinion, as to what the priority is. This was Chad Brinker on the official Titans podcast.
There's a methodology that I learned from these guys at Kellogg, who I'm still friends with today, and they're doing big things in the world and changing the world, and I'm just sitting here, you know, trying to build a football team with Rand Carthon. But they're doing some really cool stuff. But, you know, there's a decision methodology that has to do with the foundation of it is experiential intuition. That's traditional scouting. That is the foundation. When you walk into the draft room, and you have a collection of coaches and scouts sitting in there, sometimes over 200 years of experience, you don't throw that out the window.
And then Chad Brinker essentially to me, and he says experiential intuition. It sounds like a very analytic-y way to just say.
Eye test.
Eye test, yeah. Scout's opinion.
Old school. Oh, yeah.
Old school, just what the scouts say.
That's the beauty of Brinker to me is that he does have the old school skill set. He was a scout. I think it was the Packers, right? But
for the Packers.
Yeah, so he's done that. So he's been the eye test guy. I think that really helps him understand that you don't throw that out the window. You match the eye test with all of the information that you've got. And to me, that's the ideal way to go about it. But your question, there's probably going to be a guy or two where it's divided and you don't know. But that's
right.
That's why it's never going to be a perfect science.
Yeah, I don't think it will be. But I do think, based upon what he said, they will lean toward just like the traditional scouting, like watching a player, seeing what that player can do, evaluating that player, but then, you know, adding some analytics to it, you know, because, you know, Rand brings up, you know, the running back they had in San Fran, and the analytics.
Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah. The analytics states that he may not be the best running back in this year's draft, but he's the best outside zone running back in the draft. Okay. All right. Watch some film of him. Tell me what you think. Watch some film of him. Now, this is just hardcore, just basic scouting. I'm watching film of him. You know, I already told me what the analytics says. Okay, that's cool. But now we're watching film of him. Okay. I see that what you're talking about in regards to analytics and him being the best outside zone running back in this year's draft, I can see that now because now I'm watching him on television. I'm watching him in games. I know what we want out of our running backs. So now with that, I'm not going to say tidbit of information, but with that information along with the traditional scouting, going out and watching these players, watching them on film, I see why now we can draft this guy because I understand what you're saying. You're saying he's the best outside zone running back. But if I never see him, I'm just not going by that. Right. I need to watch him on film. You know, what makes him the best outside zone running back? Is it his speed, his ability to see the hole, his ability to see the defense, the linebackers, how they're flowing, his cutback ability? What is it? Because the analytics are telling me, yes, he is the best outside zone, but I need to go scout it. I need to see it on television. I need to see it on film. Okay, what you said about him is absolutely right. Okay, so let's draft him.
Right.
So I think you can marry both together, but you always have to have that traditional eye test. Like, I got to be able to see it. I know what the number says. I know what the analytics says, but I got to now marry that with what I see on the film. And if it's close to it, then okay, let's do it. But if it's not, then the analytics must be wrong right here. What am I not seeing?
Elijah Mitchell, by the way, is a potential free agent.
Yeah, he is.
Be an interesting thing to see what they're looking for. I wonder if his name comes up. I don't know if it matches with Brian Callahan's thing. He didn't have much stat-wise since they traded for McCaffrey. He's hadn't played a whole lot, hadn't got the ball a whole lot, but that year
has
before.
He been hurt? That I don't know.
I don't know that he's been hurt. He played in 11 games. I think he was hurt 2 years ago for sure. But that's an interesting one to for future. Just file that away for now. That's just an interesting example of a guy that they could be talking about who has value that hasn't, you know, he hasn't gotten a chance to play. Like, there's all these ways. That's why you have all these different things, your eye test and your analytics to evaluate players and say, these guys could hit the market. These guys could be valuable to us, and we could get them maybe at a price that other people don't realize how valuable this guy is. I mean, that's the essential Moneyball. He does specifically talk about him reading the book Moneyball and it sort of changing his view on life, right? And got him further into this whole thing. He went to business school, right, to understand the economics part, the business part of it. I thought that was fascinating, right? How he sort of trained himself to be the next, I say Brad Pitt, it's actually Billy Beane that we're talking about, right?
Right. From Moneyball.
Yeah, Paul D. Podesta, the guys that teamed together to Jonah Hill.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, imagine Chad Brinker as Jonah Hill. I don't know. That's a weird thing to think about. But it's that way of thinking, right, that gets you going down this whole road.
And I think, D-Mason, that example, that scenario, isn't that ideal? Isn't that best case scenario that you say, hey, the analytics show me one thing. Like, hey, let's check the tape. Let's watch the film. And then if what you see matches what the numbers tell you, perfect, wonderful. Feels like a no-brainer. I don't think every scenario is going to be that much of a no-brainer. I don't think that there's going to be every scenario where you watch the tape and you look at the numbers and it matches up and it feels like, okay, yeah, for sure, we definitely want to do this. I go back to when we were discussing D-Hop Gate, when we were talking about the Titans and DeAndre Hopkins, and Willie brought up on footballoutsiders.com, efficiency. Mm-hmm. And DeAndre Hopkins ranked like, what, 40-something?
Yeah, he's way down. But lower than that.
Maybe 70-something.
Yeah. By the way, I'm off 1 year on Elijah Mitchell. He's got one more year on her contract. He's a okay. 4 years, your standard contract. So he's got one more year with the Niners, so my bad. So we'll have to wait a year on that. That case study.
Write that one down.
Yeah.
Coming spring 2025.
Yeah.
When we talked about D-Hop, and D-Hop was like 70-something.
Yes, yeah, so it was in the 70s, and you freaked out, and you were like,
I don't need a number to tell me 70s. That DeAndre Hopkins is the 70th best receiver in the NFL. I think it was maybe Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson that was in the 40s. I'm like, screw that analytic. I don't need something to tell me that Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson or DeAndre Hopkins are toward the bottom of the league in any sort of statistic. When the scouts and Chad Brinker and Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan and all parties involved find themselves in that kind of situation, where a number tells you one thing and your mind, your eyes tell you another thing. Sounds like Chad Brinker saying, hey, we're going to defer to scouts. But that's what I don't know. And that's what I think is really interesting in this dynamic. When you're balancing both things, and both of those things could tell you something completely different, what do you trust?
I think ultimately, I'm a football guy. Ultimately, I'm looking at, what do I see on the field, you know? Because all 4.2s and 4.3s don't look alike. Or 4.4s don't look alike. A guy could run a 4.3 in a combine. The analytics tells me he's going to run a 4.3 at the combine. But then I watch him on the film, and it's like, nah, he's running slower than that. He doesn't play fast. So there's always going to be sort of that dilemma. Like, yeah, I know what you're telling me. I know what the number says or what the analytics says, but I'm watching this and he doesn't look that fast. So, okay, how can we get him closer to that analytic? How do we do that? Because we know he has foot speed.
Yeah.
We know that. But when I watch him on film, it doesn't look like it. So how do we get it based upon your analytics and not just an analytic from a, you know, football sense, like on the field. How do we get him from an analytic during the week? Is it rest? Is it, you know, nutrition? Mm-hmm. What is it? And that's why, you know, when Willie said analytics is not just we go for it on fourth down.
Right.
It's everything before that. Like, how do I get this guy to play faster? Because when he ran at the combine, he ran a 4.3, 4.4. But when I watch him on the film, he doesn't run that.
And how many times have we said that where players who underperform with the Titans go to another team and blossom? I mean, even Clowney with the Ravens.
So how can we get our analytics to get him to a point, him or her to a point, where they're playing closer to what the analytics say? How do you do that? I don't know. And I think that's why they're sort of changing this whole model of how they do things. They want to implement analytics in everything from the top on down, from how you eat, how you sleep, you know, how many plays you're running on practice, you know, the rest you're getting, what you're doing in the weight room, because ultimately those analytics helps you on the field. It helps with the eye test. It gets you, if I think, you know, you should be where the numbers say you are, how do we get you there? Based upon what I'm seeing and based upon the numbers that the analytics show. How do we do that?
And I also do wonder, because since analytics are a fairly new are new to the NFL, fairly new. Is that fair to say? What, like the last 5-10 years?
I would say.
That's a really interesting question, because Moneyball was early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I would say that it probably took another 4 or 5 years before baseball started. Everybody's like, wait a minute, the A's are doing this? This is what they're doing? We got to start doing that.
And then it caught on to
other sports. So yeah, that's a really good question of who were some of the first teams in football to say, okay, we need to get into this game beyond this is when we go for it on fourth down, right?
And how does that correlate to success? Because you can analytic yourself to death. You can analytic yourself all day long. But could it just come down to, do you have Patrick Mahomes or not?
Well, sure, it does. The Ravens are a team that I have studied and read about a lot in this term. I don't know how far back it goes, but the way that they evaluate. Like, remember we had Bill Polian on one time, and he would talk about certain positions that you allocate traditionally more money to, the left tackle as opposed to the middle linebacker.
Right.
The guard is maybe a little more replaceable than the tackle. You know, that it, these types of things.
Yeah.
And so they've taken it. The Ravens figure out the next level of that. You know, how do they evaluate what they offer? Like, they all of a sudden went a little more on tight ends, right? The market says you don't pay the tight end. Well, we're going to pay the tight end a little more. We're going to have the best tight ends, like Andrews and those guys.
Yeah.
Like, there's things that they have done that are really forward-thinking that really tell you that they've got a lot going on there. Like, their stability is certainly worth it. We talked about Harbaugh yesterday, how the coordinators change, but they seem to find success most of the time. Like, even a couple years ago when their Patrick Mahomes was hurt, didn't even play, Lamar Jackson, and they still almost beat the Bengals in the wild card game, were it not for a real freak play.
Yeah.
So, like, they put themselves in position as often as they can. I think they do a very good job of that, the Ravens. They don't always have the, you know, the rings, right? But they do a very good job of putting themselves in position to contend. And then if things have to fall, you have to play well in the best game, just like the Oakland A's. Oakland A's got to the playoffs all the time. They never won in the playoffs. And everybody's like, see, this analytics stuff, it's such a bunch of baloney. And they're like, but that's not the point. The point is we're getting there every year. Mm-hmm. Then the players have to make the plays.
Right.
Right? Like, Lamar Jackson has to have the great two or three playoff games for them to actually cash in on some of this stuff.
There was another thing that Chad Brinker mentioned of how they are transitioning from this past regime to now where they are now and moving on to the future that really stuck out to D-Mace. And we will get we will touch on that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. 1025 and 1063, The Game is officially inviting you to our first ever Super Saturday. Join us this Saturday at New Heights Brewery in Nashville from 1 to 5 p.m. for this fun, family-friendly soup fest benefiting the Nashville Predators Foundation. Tickets are only $10. Enjoy live music, games for kids, and come sample soup from Mafiosa's, 615 Chutney, Weston Hotel, Jasper's, and so many more. So to purchase tickets and to see all participating restaurants, go to thegamenashville.com/soup. You can also enter to win tickets to Super Saturday. Just text in the keyword soup, S-O-U-P, right now to 615-737-1025.
So my role will change a little bit in that regard, but at the end of the day, we're scouting, you know, and I'm a scout at heart, and I don't think a whole lot's going to change from that standpoint, other than I do have a lot more responsibilities as far as just handling all the different functions of the organization and getting everybody on the same page and having everybody work and come together as one team. I mean, that's the goal. Let's break down these barriers. The silos got to go away. We got to come together as one team. You know, building a championship team is a process, and it's just helping everyone push each other to get better every single day and be pulling in the same direction so that we're able to execute at a high, high level. Welcome.
Tune in to 102.5 The Game tonight as Vanderbilt men's basketball takes on Kentucky at home. Pre-game at 7 p.m., tip-off at 7:30 p.m. with coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. So this morning, D-Macy texted us and said, go to this time in the podcast, listen to what Chad Brinker says, and you tell me what you take away from that. What stood out to you about that clip?
I think there may have been, and listen, you know, I don't have no inside knowledge of it, but when you listen to people talk and you listen to certain words, you think, well, is that the way it was, or are you just throwing those words out there? When Chad Brinker, you know, brings up, you know, barriers and silos, I think there's something to it. I think in his mind, there may have been two sides, like the Vrabel. These are Vrabel's. This is Vrabel and his team, and this is Rand and his team. And that's why I spoke like during the season, like there's too much stuff coming out of that building, and it's not pro organization. It's all pro head coach and his team of guys. It never was about pro organization. Everything that ever came out was about what Vrabel was doing and how great Vrabel was. And if he leaves, he'll get picked up by somebody. It never talked about the organization as a whole. And I thought we were about building this thing as a team together, you know, front office and head coaches. And when Chad Brinker says something like that, it leads me to believe that there was these silos, there was these pods, and, you know, it was this team over here, this team over here, this team here, and it never was a cohesive unit. To me, that's the way I looked at it as, and that's why I sent y'all the text, like, y'all listen to it, because I don't want to tell y'all what I think, because this guy is too damn smart to bring up those things in regards to this organization after the head coach is dismissed. Like, we want to come in here. We want to get rid of the barriers and the silos that can exist. Well, why are you bringing that up? If it never was a problem, why would you bring that up? Which tells me that possibly was a problem. There was too much, I'm pro this guy, I'm not pro that guy. Mm-hmm. And they, even Amy, wanted to get rid of all that stuff. It's one team, one accord, one goal. That's what we're doing here. We're not, you know, team Brian Callahan and team Rand Carthon. No, this is team Tennessee Titan. And I think they got away from that, or at least Amy felt they got away from that. So that's why she chose to go in the direction she chose to go into. And Brinker comes in, and he looks at it like, whoa, there is, like, some division in here. We need to straighten this stuff out if we're going to have a organization that consistently wins.
And I think he also is doing his best, I sense, to really echo, mm-hmm. because he knows Amy Adams Strunk is listening to this podcast, right? So I think if you read the long statement that Amy Adams Strunk released the day that they made the coaching change, a lot of the things you hear Chad Brinker talking about are a lot of the things that she mentioned in the statement, right? And so he's echoing those themes. He's saying, this is what I'm trying to build, what my boss wants, what she wants. The game evolves. How many times did you hear him say that throughout that podcast? The game is evolving. We've got to get up with the times.
It's not his father's NFL either.
And as he said, you know, he doesn't say it in as many words, but it's sort of implied that Mike Vrabel he had his own way of doing it. And this is not to say Mike Vrabel is a bad coach or anything.
Exactly.
What Mike Vrabel did was his way was successful. He was loyal to the people that believed and saw the game the way he saw it. And he was going to be stubborn and push forward the way he saw it. That's not unlike plenty of coaches. And we'll see if Vrabel gets another shot somewhere else to do it his way. Or if Mike Vrabel goes away and doesn't get a job next year and says, maybe I got to evolve a little bit. But there's no question there's an implication in there for Chad Brinker that I need the coaching staff to sort of mesh with what the entire vision is here. Doesn't mean this is going to work, but this is, I think, the philosophy.
It does feel like there's an overwhelming sentiment in the league, and we know that it's a copycat league, where a lot of owners are moving away from the head coach that has a lot of say. Now, of course, Kyle Shanahan still, I believe, has final say in San Francisco. He kind of runs the show in San Francisco. But you look at Bill Belichick and Mike Vrabel, two coaches who I think wanted more control. I know Bill did. I would assume Mike Vrabel did as well. That wanted more say, that didn't get jobs in this cycle. It's the more, hey, we're going to hire the head coach that wants to coach. And that's their job, is to coach and to worry about the coaching staff and to worry about the game plan. That was a lot of what the sentiment was on that Athletic podcast with Diana Russini, because the host asked Diana, hey, do you think, surely, Mike Vrabel's going to get a job next year? Diana said, I don't know if he's going to get a job next year. Because if there are owners that continue to want GMs to GM and coaches to coach, he might not get a job. So it's either, Willie, like you said, Mike Vrabel changes or the game changes.
Yeah, it's going to be, because if you look at the teams that consistently win, even San Fran, we assume, and we could be right, we assume that Kyle Shanahan has the last say on everything. We assume that, but I think it's a little bit more. It's not just cut and dry. It's not just Shanahan has to say on on everything, and it ends with him and it begins with him.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's a little bit more complex
more
than
of a
that.
Collaboration,
yeah. It's more of a collaboration. the word. I think it's more of a collaboration. And I think they've worked so well together that they understand, like, listen, and I think Rand even said this, like, listen, the coach is going to coach. We're going to find guys that fit what the coach is doing. So in order to find guys that fit what the coach is doing, I got to sit down and I got to talk to the coach. Mm-hmm. What is it that you need, coach? What is it that you want out of your linebacker? What is it that you want out of your quarterback? What is it that you want out of your receivers? What are you looking at? What, you know, this offense that you're implementing, what type of player do you need? Okay, I'm sitting, I'm writing all this stuff down. Okay, all right, now these are the players that I got to go and get, because I got to make sure that what he has told me, the head coach has told me, these are the players that I got to identify. Mm-hmm. So when I identify these players, me bringing them in and wanting to draft them, nobody has a problem with it, because yeah. I first went to the guy that has to coach them, the head coach and the position coach. So I know exactly, as we continue to get this thing going, and I think that goes along with the 3-year sort of analytical thing. Once we get this thing to going, there's no, you know, you want – I'm just getting the guy that I know you want. I'm getting yep. that guy. So when I bring him through the door, you're not like, why did you bring this guy in
right.
here?
We're seeing,
he doesn't
we're
fit.
Already exactly. seeing the things the same way.
Absolutely.
This is another thing that's gone on in baseball a lot. There's a lot of teams that have managers. Remember the old type of manager we grew up with, Earl Weaver, Billy Martin, Bobby Cox. They all
don't get my boy Sparky Anderson.
Sparky
come on.
Anderson, but a perfect one. The guy that's coming out there to argue with the big chaw. He's kicking dirt on the umpire. He's giving the like those guys.
Are
ran,
they tall and big and intimidating those too?
Not in all cases. Definitely not Earl Weaver for sure. But those guys came out and they are running the show. There's no yeah. question who's running it. But now it's much more married to the numbers, right? If you're not willing to say, here's what the analytics department is saying, the matchups. Here's baseball, because the game is so static, pitcher versus batter, defensive positioning. If the manager is not in tune with that, mm-hmm. he's not getting a job, right? He's just not getting a job. And the manager has way more tools and better information than Earl Weaver and those guys ever had. Those guys also had to do it all themselves, right? They had no people helping them with that. But there was a conflict, right, in the movie Moneyball, mm-hmm. right? Who's the actor that played Art Howe, the manager? He passed away.
Philip Seymour Hoffman,
good call. So he's almost lampooned, right? Art Howe was a great player, and he was a very successful manager, but he had that old school thing. But he conflicted with Billy Beane, mm-hmm. alias
Brad Pitt,
right? And they were like, if you're not gonna evolve with the way we're doing things, you can't be our manager. Mm-hmm. So that is something a manager has to do. But it kind of the manager doesn't have as much power decision making than maybe he once did.
Right.
Right. And that bothered some old school managers. And I think there's maybe a little bit of that with Vrabel, right?
Totally.
Vrabel doesn't want to delegate any of this or defer to the big picture machine that's putting together all the information and the game plan. That's probably not how he's wired.
I think he comes from the Bill Belichick mindset of, I'm a football guy and I know what
yes.
my eyes tell me.
Yes.
And I don't need some kind of nerd walking in here and crunching some numbers and shoving a calculator in my face to tell me what to do.
It's not natural. That doesn't come natural to him.
Right.
That's why I think Brinker has credibility, because he at least played at a level that's a fringe professional player. So that helps, I think, his credibility.
Now, quickly, before we go to break, listen to it again. And it was something that Coach Mack said on the OTP. And because Coach, he was a head coach at Arizona with the Cardinals, he said back when he was head coach, he didn't have no GM. He didn't have all these analytics. He had to sit in the room, and it was like all this stuff. It was just like overwhelming.
Right.
And he was saying, like, I wish I had. He felt he was on an island.
Yeah.
I wish I had what y'all have now, because it would have made his job as a coach, head coach, a lot easier.
I also do wonder how much of that is we're on the Official Titans podcast,
yeah, too,
and the owner's listening,
yeah.
and we have a lot of an analytical push, so I'm going to say that. But I don't think that there's any way to tell what is the right way, what's the wrong mm-hmm. way, what's the right decision, what's the wrong decision. That's just where the league is going.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get your thoughts in on that. We'll get back into your phones. But quick, coming up next, I have a quick Predators thought. Because Dom Lashusen, who covers the NHL for The Athletic, has his tiers of teams that are likely to make the playoffs, not likely to make the playoffs. But I do wonder, from Predators fans' perspective, if the Predators don't make the playoffs, how disappointed will you be? How much of your perspective of the Predators and the postseason has changed after the 13-3 stretch, after what we've seen this team can play like? We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get into what Dom Lashusen wrote on the Nashville Predators coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.